rise. Court of Appeals, Division 1 is now in session.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. We're here for oral argument in case number CV250979. Counsel, please keep in mind we're recording and live streaming the argument, so please identify yourselves and your clients at the beginning of your argument. Each of you will have 20 minutes. You're not obligated to use all that time, but counsel for appellant, you need to watch the clock and reserve as much time as you wish for rebuttal. Also, please keep in mind we've read the briefs, we've studied the record, and we've also conferenced the case. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Stanley David Murray. Good morning, Your Honors. I represent the appellant, Karen Gonzalez. Your Honor, we're here on a case involving relocation and parenting time orders. I understand that the standard of review is abuse of discretion. And abuse of discretion occurs when the decision that was made either constituted legal error or that the record is devoid of competent evidence to support the ruling. We believe both conditions were met in this case. First of all, on the legal issue of whether the relocation issue was properly raised in the trial court, we review the petition that was filed on in 2024 that made no mention of relocation. In fact, the address that was listed by the father was for a Tennessee address. Also in the pretrial statement, no mention.
Yeah, let me ask you a question about the petitions. There's two petitions, right? There's a one petition, then an amended petition, or?
Well,
I see two in the record.
Right. The first petition was dismissed for lack of prosecution without prejudice. So what the father did was file a new petition, not an amended petition.
Okay. That's good.
The new petition was filed in 24.
In that amended petition, didn't the father ask to have primary, that the child's primary residence be with him?
Right. He asked for a parenting time schedule where he would have the child primarily, but the address was in Tennessee. It never was amended to show that he's now in Oregon. We didn't find out about that until the trial day.
Well, but mother knew that, right?
Well, that's the issue. Based on his history of housing instability and employment instability, he's lived in Philadelphia, Arizona, Tennessee, and now in Oregon. And the Tennessee situation would only lasted a year.
Well, does it matter whether it was Tennessee or Oregon? I mean, it seems to me relocation was an issue once he was asking for that the child's primary residence be with him and he doesn't live in Arizona.
Not unless he specified it was for relocation. The plans that
why what says that? Like
the
what
says that, Your Honor.
I mean relocation, if a child's being moved from Arizona, why isn't that relocation? Why does he have to say relocation in the petition?
Because the general plans that he submitted in his pretrial statement didn't say that the child's gonna be living with him in Oregon. It said they're gonna be living with him. So anybody could expect that he's going to be living back in Arizona because he's moved so much.
But mother knew he was in Oregon, and mother knew in the pretrial statement that he was in Oregon. And didn't mother's pretrial statement indicate that she already knew? Because you said before she didn't learn until the day of trial that he was in Oregon, but that's not true, right?
No, she knew that he lived in Oregon. I admit that.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that she knew that he was going to stay in Oregon because he lived in Tennessee for only 1 year. He lived in Arizona for different addresses for brief periods of time. There has to be something that says.
And the other thing is, in the transcript, it seemed to me that she says she was opposed to relocating the child.
Yes, because the issue was raised at the opening statement made by the petitioner's counsel.
Okay.
Remember, she said, hey, we're asking for relocation, Judge. But yet their petition was only about parenting time, legal decision making, and child support. And
so, is it your position that simply the omission of the word relocation from the petition, therefore anything that or any finding that was made after that is necessarily an abuse of discretion? I mean, if I say I want to be the child's primary residential parent and I live in a state other than Arizona and it says that, I mean, isn't it necessarily implied that the child would be relocated?
Not that you just have to say the word relocation. You have to make the allegations that support relocation,
and
as the Berrier case said.
Okay, but is it, and you're saying you don't believe it's sufficient to say, I would like to be the child's primary residential parent, and I live in a state other than Arizona, that it, I have to say something more than that to invoke relocation?
Yes, Your Honor. You have to say why relocation is in the child's best interest. You have to make that allegation either in the petition or in the pretrial statement.
Isn't the barrier case have to do when there's already a divorce decree and you're moving to modify it and there's a specific rule that says you have to attach an affidavit saying why there should be a modification?
That's a distinction, but the fact is that we're relocating the child from one residence to the other. Whether there's a decree in place or orders in place or not, we're making a determination of whether it's in the best interest of the child to move from Arizona to another state.
But there's no statute that says you have to make those, like any specific allegations in the context of the first relocation determination, is there?
I think the barrier case says that.
I said statute. Is there statute that says that? Because I feel like the barrier case was based in large part on there being a statute that said exactly that.
Yeah, under 24-408, if you don't have a decree, I don't think you have to give a notice that you're going to relocate.
Correct.
You still have to meet the criteria, and you list all those factors under 25-408 and 403.
So you're saying that all those factors need to be listed in the petition?
Yes, ma'am, because we didn't have notice. Because if they had alleged that, my client would be better prepared to address whether the Oregon school was going to be better than an Arizona school, whether the residence, the environment there in Oregon was going to be more suitable than the 8 years the child lived in Arizona. There's no friends there, no family practically there as compared to Arizona.
Was that objection? You said, did she object in the Superior Court on this ground that you're?
No, Your Honor. She was pro per and was just addressing the factual issues that she felt needed to be addressed.
Did she ever say in the hearing that she didn't know that relocation to Oregon was going to be an issue?
No, Your Honor. I think she knew it was Oregon, but she wasn't sure if it was going to be temporary because she did mention in her testimony, I'm not sure he's going to stay married. I'm not sure he's going to stay in Oregon. She did cover that as far as her concerns about whether Oregon would be that permanent situation.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of a different issue. What I'm trying to figure out is whether, because I feel like the case law you cited about pretrial statements and what's at issue, the whole point is to prevent litigation by ambush, right? You don't want to go in. And if she really didn't know that relocation was at issue, that's one thing. But I don't really see that evidence in the record that she didn't know it was at issue because she didn't object. Seemed like she was talking about it was in the pretrial statement. So that's what I'm wondering. That's what I care about. And is there something in the record that helps show that she did not realize relocation was at issue?
I can't cite any specific other than her concerns about whether this marriage was permanent, whether this relocation was permanent, again, based on his history of not having suitable.
Yeah, that more goes to whether he's the person who should have primary, have the child live with him, right?
Yeah,
that's why she was saying those things, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And again, the pretrial statement controls the litigation. In the Leathers case, the issue was not stated in the pretrial statement about life insurance, and so the claim for life insurance was denied for not raising it in the trial court. Same thing here. Relocation wasn't raised in the pretrial, so father has waived that issue.
Well, again, the Leathers case talks about not wanting to have litigation by trial by ambush, and that doesn't seem to be the case here.
I don't think in Leathers it was a trial by ambush as far as the life insurance policy goes. It just wasn't mentioned in the pretrial, and so the court said, hey, you don't get
I guess I could be confusing which of the two cases you talked about, about the pretrial statement controlling the litigation, but one of them said one of the reasons that we want that the pretrial statement has to include these issues is because we don't want to have trial by ambush.
Right.
So if party has notice, then that's not trial by ambush, right?
Other than having a chance to respond appropriately. If she had known that these were the factors that father was relying on and saying that Oregon was in the child's best interest, she would be able to address those. So even if she had notice he was staying in Oregon, she didn't have notice as to what the conditions were there that she could address at trial. That's the purpose of the pretrial statement.
Well,
she had the opportunity to ask, right, to cross-examine him?
Yes, sir, she did.
Isn't the real question here, the court was, correct me if I'm wrong, was trying to figure out who was the primary residential parent should be. And that means you're even living in with her in Arizona or wherever he is, whether that be Tennessee, Oregon. I mean, I don't know that how much detail. I mean, wasn't that that was the option before the court is who's going to be the primary residential president, A or B?
And where? Where, I think, is the issue. because of his housing instability. She had
no. Where's the case law that says it has to be where? I mean, I know that's a factor. I mean, to consider if you're obviously if you're in living in China versus
the
United States or Mexico or wherever you want to go. I mean, that's a factor to consider. But I don't know that there's any case law or any statute you can quote me that says.
I think the statute itself says that. 25408 says, show us why, make these allegations under these factors as to why Oregon is a better choice than Arizona.
And the court didn't do that?
I don't think the court did. In fact, for the court to all of a sudden say we're going to do relocation now, it's much like the Heidbreider case, which I didn't cite, but the court needs a citation, which were, hey, we're going to change custody, and I'm also going to do child support. And at that case, the mother didn't know that it was going to be a child support issue, so the court vacated the child support order.
Do you have the cite for that?
Yes, sir. 236 Arizona 377, Appeal 2012.
Thank you.
And that, in that case, actually, when you do have a change of custody, the statutes require you to change child support. But in this case, even though the mother should have expected there's going to be child support, because it wasn't alleged and it wasn't set out in the pretrial statement, the court said she did not have notice of the child support issue. I'm coming back to that, to the same argument here. We weren't specifically alleged or notified of the Oregon was going to be a permanent relocation. So that's our argument on that. But I want to get to the findings themselves, that there was no competent evidence to support relocation. When you go through the 403 factors, you'll see that neither of those or none of those factors supported the ruling in favor of father. One of the big issues was that mother was denying him parenting time. Well, the court made a finding that that factor didn't support either party. So it couldn't be based on denying parenting time. And besides, there was no prior order for parenting time here. So mother didn't violate any orders. If father didn't like the parenting time that she was giving him, go to court and establish a parenting time order. You don't allow relocation just because you're interfering with parenting time. You've got to go through all those factors. One of the most important factors is the lack of establishment of any kind of contact that the child had with the Oregon school system, with the Oregon neighborhood, with the living conditions in Oregon. In fact, they were living in a two-bedroom apartment with one, two, three adults and a baby. That living situation there was not suitable compared to what was going on in Arizona. No friends or family other than the immediate family up there in Oregon. No evidence of the educational plan, how this school was better than homeschooling in Arizona. And in fact, it seems that this judge was prejudiced towards a brick and mortar school rather than homeschooling.
You don't think the record shows that he was more prejudiced against, or not prejudiced, that's the wrong word, that he was more questioning whether mother had the capacity to properly homeschool?
Had
the capacity to properly homeschool.
Well, the judge asked, is it true that any garden variety parent can homeschool? And father admitted that yes. And father's only concerned about her ability to homeschool was she misstated a math problem. That's not sufficient, I don't think, to show that child's not getting proper education here in Arizona.
Well, I mean, she wasn't aware. She only knew whether that he was performing at grade level based on what the tutor said. He's never taken a standardized test. She used kind of an online form to, or online program to download what kind of, you know, his coursework, that kind of thing. And she also said she was overwhelmed. She was working other jobs. Isn't that within the Superior Court's discretion to say, yeah, that doesn't seem like a great school environment?
Well, I don't want to argue the facts as far as the judge has discretion on the findings of fact, but the educational level I thought was established not only by the tutor's, my client's testimony regarding what the tutor had said, the father also said that the child is mature for his age. His mother had said that the child has a great reading level. And there was never any proof, which was father's burden, to show that the homeschooling wasn't working appropriately. The trial court said the burden was on my client to prove extrinsic evidence of what the child's educational level was.
Where did the trial court say that?
Sorry?
Where did the trial court say that the burden was on your client?
You'll see that in the findings that the trial court made. She made no extrinsic evidence. She provided no extrinsic evidence of the child's schooling educational level.
Okay.
And that would be for the father's burden, because he's the one who wants to relocate. And again, he's the one saying that Oregon is the better school system, but provides no evidence of that, other than his wife testifying that, well, we checked out some schools and they have a high rating. That's not sufficient, I don't think, for establishing the burden of proof on how Oregon would be better.
Do you disagree that, you know, you've argued in your brief that the court shouldn't have relied on mother's her demeanor when she, about how that father was talking about how mother was thwarting his parenting time, and the court relied on her demeanor. And I'm wondering, do you disagree that there was other evidence in the record that mother was thwarting father's parenting time, like the text messages, father's testimony?
And I thought it went back and forth, actually.
I know, but so if it went back and forth, isn't that within the court's discretion to decide?
Certainly.
And do you think, because your argument about her demeanor, simply because the court pointed that out, does that mean that the court erred? Or is it enough, is that okay if there's other factors that supported that mother was thwarting parenting time?
I think where the court said the most compelling reason for relocation with mother's behavior in court is obviously incorrect. And that's under the...
You say it's obvious, and it does strike me as potentially problematic. But I didn't see any authority in your brief, like a case from anywhere. What authority is there that says? Did you find a similar case anywhere where a court had relied on somebody making gestures or demeanor in sitting at counsel table?
Not specifically, Your Honor, but I did cite the Stapley case that says you don't punish a parent by awarding custody to the other parent. You got to look at the best interest of the child.
Of course. That's always going to be preeminent, right? The best interest
Certainly.
Of the child. So that being said, doesn't the court have inherent authority to look at everything that goes on in the course of the litigation, including things that transpire in the courtroom?
Well, I think the appropriate response would have been for the trial court to admonish my client to behave in court, but it shouldn't affect the relocation issue. That's a serious issue affecting the best interest of the child.
Understood. Yeah.
How she appears in court doesn't affect the best interest, I don't think. But the court should focus on that and focus on the brick-and-mortar setting versus homeschooling. Judge even asked the father, are you going to homeschool this child? Well, I do like homeschooling, but no, Judge. A brick-and-mortar, definitely. For as long as necessary. Well, of course that's how he's going to respond. It's obvious the judge was in favor. I hate using the word obvious, but that's where the judge is leaning. He changed the custody order to Oregon because he didn't like the way my client behaved in court, and he didn't like brick and mortar. I hope the court reverses it on that issue. I'm going to save my time unless the court has more questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Please the court. My name is Brad Reinhardt. This is Gabby Esparza. She's my assistant. I represent father. The court should affirm the trial court's.
And just for the record, father's name?
Akowali. Richard Akowali.
Okay. Thank you.
The court should affirm the trial court's decision because there was adequate notice, and the court has the discretion and heard all the evidence and held father to the standard. Relocation where both parents live in state is notice is dealt with 408A. Obviously, that doesn't apply here. That doesn't mean that 408I factors are in play. The barrier case that the court talked about earlier says that. But I would point out in the footnote 2 of that case, it says flat out, 208 describes the circumstances under which a party must give notice, and notice is emphasized. So where do we look? Well, we can look at Rule 23, Arizona Rules of Family Law Procedure. 1 through 7 includes petitions, pleadings that must be served. The legislator elected not to include relocation in 1 through 7. Instead, you have a situation where a person is already out of the state and is asking for parenting time out of state. As the court pointed out, as soon as he filed it, mother was alerted that she was doing a relocation. At the time he filed the initial petition, he had a Tennessee address. He was exercising parenting time in Tennessee. She knew that it was an out-of-state situation. his last-minute move. In her pre-hearing statement, she included that he had recently moved to Oregon. Clearly, she was in the loop. They were having a conversation. She included it in her pre-hearing statement. More glaring is the fact that she didn't object at any point of the trial. They both walked in with the court and her and father knowing relocation was being discussed. And that was the thing that was discussed throughout the case.
If she didn't object in the trial court, isn't that a waiver? Can we consider it on appeal?
I think so, but I think you have the discretion of still considering it. I think the judge still considered it in the motion to alter and amend, and again reiterated that it's in the best interest of the child to move to Oregon. And
was she represented once the motion to alter and amend was filed? Okay.
She was. And I think that is an important distinction, because if she would have raised the objection at trial, evidence could have been taken. The court could have continued it. The court could have said, okay, we'll give you a little bit more time. After evidence had been closed, she brings up this new issue. And the court did consider it and said, no, relocation is appropriate. That the father has met his burden under 408G. And the judge lays out the factors. So the court can also look at
Is there a requirement to plead those factors at all? To mention 408, to talk about the relocation factors. If you're simply filing to establish parenting, you want to be the primary residential parent, you live out of state, is that in and of itself sufficient in your mind to allege relocation, or do you need to do more, as your friend suggests?
I think good practice would be to do more, to go through all of the factors and lay them out, but I don't think it's required. I don't think it ends the conversation, because all of the factors are discussed in the pleadings in some form or another, and they were all discussed at trial. I would point to Arizona Rules of Family Law Procedure 24D that talks about pleadings are supposed to be construed in a manner to achieve substantial justice. I think that's important, because just because the word relocation isn't there, everybody knew that this was relocation. Mother didn't have a problem that it was going to be relocation until the decree came out and father gained primary control.
Can I ask you a follow-up question on the petition? So it was a form petition, right? The father filed on his own, and it was a form petition created by the Superior Court. And is there a spot to list the factors for relocation?
No.
Okay. That's what I think. I just wanted to make sure, because
And it was a form, and I think that because the legislator did not provide a specific notice when you're already out of state, it's integrated into the fact that he's already out of state. If you're asking for parenting time and you're out of state, relocation's obviously on the table. So she knew it from day one that it was on the table. And 6 months before, they were talking. In the transcript, the wife talks about the fact that the judge at the hearing 6 months before, father was saying, hey, am I not going to get to see my kid for the next 6 months? And the judge said, if you don't get to see your kid, it's going to affect my final ruling. So they were talking about out-of-state parenting time 6 months before. The fact that it's Oregon versus Tennessee, it's not really a factor that matters. I think that's within the discretion of the judge to say, all right, this wasn't done for surprise. This wasn't done as an ambush. This was done because he just randomly moved. As far as stability, he had a six-month-old child at the time. He lived there. He still lives there today. He was stable. I think that the stability is not a good argument. The judge demonstrated that he thoroughly paid attention. One, by he issued email rules, communication rules. That doesn't happen in every case. That happens only in the cases where the communications between the parties is very hostile. Mother admitted that at times she was hostile. She talks about her bipolar, her lack of medication. All of these things were factored in to Judge Drake's decision. It wasn't just the brick and mortar versus the homeschooling. It was the fact that mom couldn't do simple math. The mom didn't have the time. She had a full-time job. She was employed. That was another concern of father's. The socialization. Wife brought up the socialization for the child. There were so much more going on in the 3 hours of testimony than these individual points, and the judge thoroughly goes through through them in his decision. He talks.
Let me ask you about the demeanor question. Do you think it was proper for the judge to rely on mother's demeanor?
So the way Judge Drake said it is she seemed to relish not just her demeanor. So I do think demeanor factors.
But isn't it problematic because it's non-testimonial?
I don't think so. I think that every judge that sits on the bench and determines the credibility of a witness determines it through their demeanor
as well. But she wasn't testifying as a witness. She was sitting at the table. But couldn't he have pulled her up and asked her questions about it afterwards?
Absolutely.
I mean, and so that troubles me that he didn't.
So a parent that relishes only in the difficulties he had in trying to get his kid is not an ideal parent.
I agree. My problem is relying on someone sitting, what someone's face is showing, who's sitting at, you know, sitting at the table, who is, you know, per and is, you know, who knows what people are thinking based on their facial expressions. I mean, when they're testifying and saying something and they seem like they're, you know, lying, then that's one thing. But like looking at them and being like, this is what I think she's thinking, I find that problematic.
I can definitely see it, but I think that I tell clients when we're in front of judges and or juries, be aware everybody's watching.
Well,
you.
I know, but that doesn't make it proper, right?
Well, right. Yeah. And what about Mr. Murr's comment? I think it's well taken that what I want you to respond to. He said, look, best interest has to be the overarching theme. It can't be. I mean, you can never award custody, parenting time on the grounds that there's bad behavior. That's not that. It still has to be best interest. How do you respond to that?
The judge doesn't say that. The judge goes through all of the factors of 403, 408, goes through all of the reasons why that goes into his decision, and he watched 3 hours of testimony. The fact that she relished in it and he considered that, I understand the court's point, but I do think that it says something about a parent that is a mentally healthy parent wants a relationship. They can separate their animosity for the parent and the relationship with the kid. She was celebrating his difficulty. She was celebrating his difficulty in getting parenting time with its child. That's different. If she were relishing in the fact that he lost $50, different situation. She wasn't. She was relishing when he was describing the cancellations of.
But she's relishing from counsel table, right? She's not relishing on the stand. And in the criminal context, it's very clear that the court is not supposed to take into account a non-testifying defendant's demeanor sitting at counsel table when they're not testifying. That's reversible error in the criminal context. Why should the rule be different in the family law context?
I don't know that necessarily it should. I know that is just one point that Judge Drake pointed out. He also pointed out all of the other factors under 403. He talked about the socialization with the brick and mortar school. He talked about mother's mental health, lack of medication. On cross-examination, she's testified that she frequently forgets she doesn't take them regularly. Discussed the frustrations of the parenting time, but he also discussed the bad parts of father. He said father's attempt to take the kid out in the middle of the night was a problem. So it shows that he thoroughly looked at all angles, and it wasn't just the relish. And I do understand the court's point, and I don't think that was the end of it. I think
didn't the court say, again, quote, one of the most compelling reasons was the demeanor while not testifying?
But I don't think it showed. It is. I don't think it rises to the level of bias, though, because I think he does listen to all of the other evidence. I think the fact that he includes in there the communication rules, because he recognized this was one of those kind of cases, and he held father to the standards. Father had to present his wife and his testimony to show it's better there. This is a move that's going to help the child. And he found it twice, because he found it in the initial decree, and then he found it again in his order for denying the alter amend.
Let me, I'd like you to go through, you started going through the factors that supported the court's best interest determination. So you said socialization, mother's mental health, parenting time issues. Are there other factors that the court relied on setting aside the demeanor factors?
The 408 factors?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, ma'am. So he discussed both parents acting in good faith, not acting for financial reasons. He discussed both parents not acting to interfere with the other parent's parenting time. I think that goes to the thoroughness of the judge's.
True, but what supports father, it being in the child's best interest to be with father? That's what I want to know.
The judge talked about the fact that father had stabilized, had married, new child, and that mother had said that. Wife testified that education is a big factor, and she was a psychologist. She testified to that during hers. he discussed, Judge Drake discussed the credibility of father. Father appeared credible when he was talking about this, about how he wanted the child. He talked about mother working full time and that not being the best situation when trying to also educate a child, along with the mental health issues. He recognized that relocation, Judge Drake recognized relocation would be an initial problem, that it would be initial stabilization, but that the, once the child acclimated, it would be best all around for the child. Judge Drake found that father met his burden on the two occasions. So I think that Judge Drake demonstrated a thorough, that he thoroughly was attentive to everybody's testimony, and father met his burden. Father showed that the child's best interest would be served by going up there. I don't think any one factor, the brick and mortar school versus the home school, the relishing, I don't think any one thing changed, was the thing that tipped the basket. I think it was the totality that the judge goes through and listening to 3 hours. The judge also talked about the people that came over to beat him, that he grabbed an axe, the time that, and father's moves. All of this was discussed. All of this was discussed in the decree, demonstrating.
Sorry.
That's all right.
My water spilled.
Glad it wasn't me.
It's because I poured him water. That's why.
No good deed. And Judge Drake goes through all of these in a lengthy decree and points out all of these in his decree, goes through each of the factors under 408I, goes under 403. He goes through them very thoroughly. He doesn't, it's not just this was a call, and he doesn't leave you guessing as to why he made it. He does explain
Let
why
Let me
he
ask
made.
You another question related to that. Can we consider factors that are in the transcript but not in Judge Drake's decree?
I think so. I think that the court is, I read an opinion, I don't remember which one, it talks about that the court is looking for, if it's there, we uphold the ruling. And so I don't think Judge Drake could have put, you know, 160-page transcript all into his decree.
Right.
He's the one that sat there for 3 hours watching, listening, asking questions. And you notice Judge Drake is very active in asking questions, probably in part because it was a pro per, and so she would have a little bit more difficulty. But she didn't have any problems, it didn't seem, expressing herself. She went on at length. And it's important, when she was asked about the relocation, her answer wasn't, no, this was a surprise to me. Her answer was, if he's stable and sober. And the wife had testified, he is stable and sober. I wouldn't allow a drunk or somebody unstable to be around my new child, my six-month-old. So I think that mother's response, not being that I was not aware that we were going to be talking about relocation at that point when asked, I think that that's important because she only brought it up when she lost. And kudos to the lawyer that saw this as an issue and tried to overturn it for that. That was never any issue until after the decree was issued and the motion to alter and amend. And it was in his pre-hearing statement. He gave two options. Father, he gave option A, my parenting time is less than equal up in Oregon, or option B, my time as primary parent up in Oregon. It was both up in Oregon. And mother's position at the beginning of the trial.
Did the pretrial statement actually mention Oregon? Because I thought I did a fine research of the document.
Mother's did.
Oh, mother's did.
Mother's
okay.
Actually says he recently relocated to Oregon.
But father's doesn't. Father's doesn't mention Oregon.
I think he includes it as an address on it. I think it's. It was Phelan would have been the lawyer at that time. No, I don't know that it does.
Okay.
But clearly mother was in the loop. She was having the conversation because she was aware that it was Oregon that they had gone to. And it had been a recent move. It was while the case was pending. So I think that the fact that she waited until after evidence was closed, the decision was made, that's when the argument came up that relocation was not properly pled. And it was. Just because it didn't include the relocation doesn't matter. If it was always understood in prior hearings and prior discussions, even in mother's pre-hearing statement, in mother's answer, she talks about him exercising parenting time in Tennessee. She talks about her taking the child to Tennessee. So her answer to not wanting relocation because she didn't know if dad was stable or sober, I think that's telling, that this was not a surprise to her, that she knew going in she was going to be talking about that, as does her pre-hearing statement. And Judge Drake very clearly went through the factors, said that there was ample notice. And I would point out that the legislature chose not to have the notice requirement as 408A requires or as Rule 23 requires, 1 through 7 summons and all of that, because most times that you're out of state seeking parenting time, you're going to satisfy the rules of procedure because you're going to file a petition to establish, petition of divorce, petition to modify, some form. The Barrier case talks about, I think the court brought it up, the fact that this was not a modification properly pled before the court. That was the issue that it got remanded for, because it did not properly meet the high standards under Rule 23. It was not remanded because notice of relocation was not pled. And I think the same is true here. Judge Drake thoroughly looked at all of the evidence, thoroughly listened to the testimony, explained his reasoning and logic, and found that notice was sufficient, notice was adequate, and that all of the factors under 403 and 408I led to the best interest being that the child go to Oregon with dad.
And I see you only have a couple minutes left. Would you take a moment to address the trial court's apparent, I don't know how you want to categorize it, favoring brick and mortar versus homeschooling?
I don't think he did. So he asked father, right up, he said, are you a fan of homeschooling? Father said, yes, I am. He said, not in this case. And I think the court didn't have a bias against brick and mortar versus homeschooling. I think he just said, why is that what you're going to do when you're up in Oregon? And father said, no, I'm going to have the kid in a brick and mortar school. I don't think the bias was brick and mortar versus that. I think it was the way mom was doing it, because she had all of the jobs. She had work. She wasn't standardized testing. And I think that the court did say that there was no extrinsic evidence of standardized testing or how the child was doing, and to show that mom didn't really have a good argument why that was better.
So in your view, it's the quality of the homeschooling, not the fact that it was homeschooling.
Yes, sir. Okay. And I think that the testimony bears witness to that. I think that the fact that father said, I like it. So I'm not saying this is bad, but he made a little comment about the division. He made a comment about mother's education. And then the court also had to consider the bipolar, unmedicated, the ADHD, unmedicated, all of those things, that might not be the best situation for a person to teach a child at that, with all of those things going on.
Let me ask you, you don't have any more time, but one of the things your friend said is that he shifted the burden to mother to show that child was, you know, operating at grade level. Is that not wrong?
It is wrong. I don't read the decree to say that. I think the judge is just saying, this is what I'm looking at. I don't think he's saying that mom didn't prove her case. He's saying, I'm weighing the best interest of the child. I'm seeing that dad's going to put him in a brick and mortar school that he's affiliated with, and mom has him in maybe a substandard homeschooling, and I've weighed those factors. But I don't think he said, I'm holding that against her, and I'm going to fight against her for that. Or that she had to burden to prove it was the better. I think under the 408I factors, one of the factors is how that kid's going to do school-wise, environment-wise, financially, all of that.
Well, if father was the petitioner, didn't he have the burden? Is that not
right? He had the overall burden, and he had to, under 408G, he did have the burden. I don't think the judge is saying, I'm holding the burden to her, as much as he's just saying, this is what the evidence was.
Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel,
thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Stanley David Murray again for the appellant. I wanted to address the question Judge Fabian had about looking at the transcript rather than whether the judge made all the necessary findings. Unfortunately, you have to look at the order, and that's ARS 25403 in the Reed versus Reed case. The court has to make written findings on all of those factors and explain why it's in the best interest of the child to relocate to Oregon. So I don't think the court has the authority to look through the transcript like looking for truffles, as they say, to find out if there's any evidence there to support the judge's findings. He's got to make those findings in the order, and that's what the court looks to.
I've got another question, sorry. If that comment about the mother's demeanor shows biased, does that mean in and of itself that we have to reverse? Like, is it, if it's biased, If we decide that that shows bias, does that mean we have to reverse even if there's other factors that support the best interest determination?
Yes, Your Honor, because if that's the compelling reason for relocation, that's not sufficient under the law.
Yeah, but if there's other factors that support it, I guess is my question.
The other factors have to be the findings that were made. And contrary to what Mr. Reinhart says, those factors don't really favor either parent. You review those are neutral. And indeed, they don't support the relocation issue because the judge says the compelling reason is because of mother's behavior in court.
Okay.
So that doesn't support that decision. Also, there was a question about mother's overworked schedule. Her schedule is raising the child and attending that homeschool. She works at home full time raising the child. She offers a like a neighborhood service there. She does work outside of the home. Well, it's a PRN, I guess it's some kind of a nursing position, but it is on an intermittent basis. It's not consistent and it doesn't interfere with raising the child. I'd also like to direct the court to the trial transcript, pages 159 through 160, where my client explains her concerns about the Oregon relocation. Yes, she knew that he was living in Oregon, but she points out that he's had so many different residences, so many different jobs. And look at the Tennessee situation. He was there for only a year. The job there only lasted a year. So, yeah, she has concerns about whether this Oregon relocation is going to work, that Mr. Okowoli, I don't know if I pronounced his name right either, didn't present allegations to show that he intended to permanently reside in Oregon and how this Oregon situation was in the child's best interest. I'm out of time unless the court has any questions.
No.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel, we thank you both for your arguments this morning. The matter is under advisement, and we will issue our decision in due course. The court will stand in recess briefly to set up for the next argument.